But her words hit hard. "You remember me?" he asked. Sen froze. She pulled back and made a face. She looked at him oddly.
"I know who you are. I know that I can trust you. That you comfort me when I'm down, when I'm scared, and whenever I just want to feel you near me."
A blush rose to her cheeks. She darted in for a kiss, then pulled her lips away quickly. But she didn't remember him, or anything from their timeline. Her eyes locked onto his, and she smiled. She pursed her lips and leaned in close. Nathan felt conflicted. A hand wandered over his crotch. Sen's eyes seemed to sparkle. Nathan swallowed, leaned in, and kissed her. She felt like Sen, tasted like Sen, kissed like Sen. When he pulled away, Nathan's doubts had vanished. He felt uncertain because of her lack of memories, but she felt the same way about him that Sen always had. She cuddled against him. Her hair tickled his chin, and his stubble rubbed against her scalp. Her hand crept into his pants, and she giggled against his throat as he hardened in her grip.
"Always so big," she murmured.
Nathan saw Kadria sitting on the bed. The messenger sat cross-legged, staring at him and Sen with an expressionless face. She stuck her tongue out a few seconds after Nathan locked eyes with her. Suddenly, Sen flew across the room. She squealed. Her landing was soft, broken by the bed, but she panicked anyway, kicking her arms and legs out because she couldn't see the bed that she had landed on. After a few moments, an invisible force snapped into place, holding her limbs in place and preventing her from flailing about.
"Nathan, what's going on?" she asked.
"You're fine," Kadria said. "Now just lay here for a bit while I collect my prize. You can fill yourself up later." Sen looked at Kadria, who sat next to her. Then she looked at Nathan, before continuing to squirm. Sen appeared to be able to see and hear Kadria, but she hadn't panicked like earlier, although she didn't like being held down by whatever magic Kadria was using. "Come here," Kadria said. She curled a finger inward while pointing at Nathan. Nathan's vision blurred, and he found himself standing over Kadria again. Deja vu, he felt. Hot breath blew over his exposed cock, and he stared down at the excited messenger. Her tongue lolled out of her mouth as she stared excitedly at his length. "Before I forget," Kadria muttered. She held a finger out, which glowed white. Power thrummed in it. Nathan could feel a tiny thread of energy pour into Kadria through him, and stared in confusion. Had Kadria drawn on energy from his binding stone? Through him? How had she done that? "Pay attention," Kadria said, slowly lowering her glowing finger. "You said last time this was impossible. You're a smart cookie, so maybe you'll pick up a thing or two from a demonstration. Even if you don't, I know the way I like my men." She grinned. Insatiable. Nathan didn't know what she meant by that. Her finger made contact with his tip, and the power poured into him. He gasped as he felt his entire crotch throb in response. Something built up within his length and tried to push its way out. After a moment, Nathan felt like that something had succeeded. Gasping for air, Nathan looked down. Nothing seemed different at a glance. "Hopefully that worked," Kadria said, holding her hands either side of his length.
"What did you do?"
he asked. His voice was raspy. His cock throbbed like it had never throbbed before. Before Kadria could answer, Sen let out a squeal. She glared at the two of them.
"Oh, hush," Kadria said.
She waved her hand, and suddenly Sen appeared underneath Kadria.
"Make yourself useful."
Without hesitating, Kadria reached down and pulled her panties open. She then lowered herself onto Sen's face. A strange expression crossed Kadria's face after a few moments, before she sighed in pleasure. "I'm glad I brought over this part of her," Kadria mumbled. "She really knows what she's doing. Even if bringing over the lovey-dovey part is playing with fire." Kadria's face was brilliantly red, and her breath hot enough to boil water as it blew over Nathan's shaft. Somehow, he had an idea of what she meant by playing with fire. By playing with Sen's memories and emotions, Kadria had affected herself. Or perhaps she was hornier than he thought. No matter. Nathan gripped her horns. Kadria gasped and obediently opened her mouth wide. Her eyes widened and locked with his, her red pupils noticeably dilated. She was spread flat over Sen, giving him a straight line down her throat. Wet noises filled the room as Sen licked Kadria. Kadria's hands wandered beneath Sen's skirt and pulled her white cloth panties down. Clear liquid bubbled up and dribbled down Nathan's length. Kadria lapped up every drop, even as her fingers explored and exposed Sen. The messenger began to moan and beg. "Please," Kadria mumbled. "You promised." Nathan placed a hand on his shaft, lowered it, and slid it down Kadria's waiting throat. Her eyes curved as her lips pressed against his groin. Using her horns, he used her the way she expected to be used. Her body shuddered as she climaxed from the attention. Sen hadn't let up. Heat surged within Nathan, and he finished. Kadria moaned around the mess in her throat, eyes closed. Nathan noticed a funny feeling in his crotch. He looked down and noticed he wasn't softening. At all. Kadria began to move, entirely focused on his length. "What did you do?" he asked again. Kadria giggled around him. He pulled her off. "You complained you couldn't get yourself ready fast enough," she said. "I made sure that wouldn't be a problem ever again." Oh no. To punish her for messing with his body, he went for as long as he felt possible. Sen tried to tag in, but Nathan focused on punishing one particular messenger. Eventually, he gave up. Kadria was insatiable. Nathan felt the same way. He didn't feel exhaustion even after an hour of doing this. Physically, at least. His mind was spent, but his body felt fresh. "Hey, stop that," Kadria protested. Sen lapped at Kadria's cheeks and lips, sucking up stray bits of white that Kadria had missed. The messenger pushed Sen away before using her magic to keep herself protected. "Mine," Kadria said, collecting everything from her bronzed skin with her fingers. "Uh-huh," Sen rolled her eyes. "Next time, save a turn for me, Nathan. Maybe tonight?" Nathan met Sen's eyes and nodded. For a moment, he felt wrong for agreeing, but the look in her eyes made it clear that Sen wanted this. He'd been with her for years in his timeline, and he had her back. This timeline nonsense drove him crazy, but at least he could get his women back. He snuck Sen out and back to his room without anybody noticing. If this was to become a habit, he needed to add a bathroom to his office. Or maybe rearrange the keep so that his office and bedroom were closer together. Once cleaned up and sufficiently filled, Sen stretched and gave Nathan a hug.
"I missed you."
Nathan's breath caught in his throat.
"I missed you too."
He paused.
About Kadria.
"Who?"
Sen stared at him in confusion.
"The woman from earlier."
She continued to stare.
"Bronzed skin?"
No recognition at all.
Had Kadria used some sort of magic to prevent Sen from remembering her? Or was something more insidious at work? A knock at the door drew Nathan from his thoughts. Sen opened the door before Nathan could stop her. Faye stared at Sen, then at Nathan. The beastkin wore her nightgown and underwear, and was holding her comb and brush. Her tail and ears stood on end, and she bore her fangs.
Faye, wait, wait! Nathan shouted.
Faye froze, fangs still bared, as Sen stared at Faye in confusion. Did Sen remember Faye? She seemed to hold her head as if she was trying to, but the look of confusion on her face suggested something was wrong.
Shouldn't she be bound up? Faye hissed.
We've come to an agreement, Nathan said. She's going to fight for us as a champion. Faye blinked. Several moments passed, and an undecipherable expression crossed her face. Eventually, her tail and ears returned to normal, and she held out a hand.
Yefela, she said. Call me Faye.
Sen licked her lips and hesitantly took the hand, then winced as Faye nearly shattered every bone in it.
Sen, I feel like we've met before.
Another strange expression crossed Faye's face, and she stared at Nathan for several seconds. Then Faye turned back to Sen with a big smile.
Silly, we have.
Wait, what?
We just fought, Faye chirped. I knocked you out. You fought really well.
Sen blinked, her head tilted to one side. Giggles crept out of her mouth, and soon both she and Faye were uncontrollably laughing. Nathan scratched his stubble. He felt lost. All's well that ends well, he supposed.
Nathan, brush my tail, Faye said, bounding up to him.
Sen appeared next to Faye.
Oh, I can do that for you, Faye. Why don't we let Nathan rest?
Faye smiled back.
Oh, I'm sure he'll get plenty of rest while he brushes out my tail. It's not like he needs to move while I lay on his lap.
The two women smiled at each other for several seconds before turning to Nathan.
Ah, now this was a nostalgic feeling for him.
Chapter 16. On the other side of the Garrick Mountains, a mild rain shower passed over a fortress in the Amica Federation. It was known as Fort Tobram. Pools of water built up on the arid land outside the walls. A moat around the wall captured some of the runoff, and drainage ditches pulled much of it farther away from the fort. Soldiers in tan and gray uniforms took shelter. A patrol outside the fort paused, and its lead officer held a handout to the rain. He shrugged and ordered his men to continue as normal. Within the walls of the keep, protected from the weather in a palatial office, a woman worked through a small stack of paperwork. A young boy stood at attention at the door. He watched every movement she made, but kept himself perfectly still. The reason was obvious to even a casual observer. A pair of jade gemstones glittered from the woman's collarbone. She wore a figure-hugging black dress with a pattern woven into it that evoked the watcher Omria, and slits were cut into the thighs. In her homeland, this style of dress was relatively commonplace. The woman was known as Seraph. Nobody knew her true name. Perhaps not even her bastion knew. That was commonplace for the people from the Kurai Peninsula. They took on a false name when they came of age, and only gave their true name to those they trusted. Seraph finished some of her paperwork and added it to a nearby pile of finished papers. After brushing back her long black hair, she took a sip of wine. The only noises in the office were those she made and the gentle beating of rain on the glass windows behind her. Her wine glass was empty, so Seraph poured another. She clicked her tongue as only a fingertip of red nectar poured into her glass. It vanished as quickly as it had appeared. One of her gems flashed, and the wine bottle disintegrated into a pile of glittering dust. Seraph didn't utter a word. Instead,
she retrieved the next item of paperwork. The office filled with the scrawling of her pen. The boy stepped forward and placed another bottle of wine on the table. It was the same year and vintage, and he had uncorked it in advance. Seraph gave him a dismissive glance, and he scurried away to retrieve a dustpan and brush to sweep up the remains of the earlier wine bottle. A shadow appeared in the corner of the room within seconds of the door slamming. It grew into the shape of a young woman, and Sunstorm emerged from the darkness. Seraph paused. She placed her pen down and turned to Sunstorm, wine glass in hand.
"I didn't expect to see you for another week," Seraph said.
She crossed her legs and gave Sunstorm her full attention.
"I'm assuming this isn't good news. You're not prancing about the office, for one thing."
"I don't prance."
Sunstorm strode into the center of the room. A set of plush chairs and sofas surrounded a stained glass coffee table, on top of which sat a set of statues of the Watcher Omria. Ignoring the table, Sunstorm dragged a chair over to the same side of the desk that Seraph sat on.
"You do realize there are chairs there," Seraph said, inclining her head at the pair of simple chairs on the far side of the massive oak desk.
Sunstorm ignored her. She plopped herself down on the plush couch she had dragged over and glared at Seraph. Seraph sipped at her wine and waited.
"We've lost our best bandits," Sunstorm said after several long seconds.
"The ones under the young spellblade?" Seraph asked.
"Sen, yes,"
Sunstorm scowled.
"They were too busy licking their wounds after the new bastion scared them at Trantia, and they paid the price."
"You wouldn't be so frustrated if that was it," Seraph said.
Sunstorm's eyes lingered on the wine. With a sigh, Seraph snapped her fingers at a cabinet in the corner. Its doors opened, and a wine glass flew across the room. Sunstorm deftly caught it, then held out her glass for a drink.
"Did we lose our other contact?" Seraph pressed.
If they had, she would have a tough conversation coming.
"No, I confirmed that there are no issues on that front, despite your concerns."
Sunstorm guzzled down half of her wine in one go, much to Seraph's dismay.
"The Bastion showed up while I was convincing Sen to continue with our deal. The storm came in, and a moment later, he was there."
Her scowl deepened.
"His champion didn't even have a gem. How reckless could he be?"
"Not reckless enough to lose his head," Seraph noted. "Or else you would have strode in here with the heads of both him and his champion. You lost, I take it."
"I didn't lose,"
Sunstorm shouted, rising to her feet. She paused, taking in Seraph's calm gaze.
"I retreated, noting the storm and the loss of our resources. He'd blown apart most of the camp already. The bandits had fled, and his champion had incapacitated Sen. Further battle was unwise."
"If I thought you capable of learning to be less reckless, I'd believe you."
Seraph gave her subordinate a mocking smile and drained her glass. She rose and walked over to the glass windows.
"He scared you, didn't he?"
Silence. The rain pattered against the windows. Seraph stared down into the courtyard, watching as ripples formed in the puddles below. The land was so arid this close to the mountains, at least on this side. Useless land for the Federation, she knew.
"His sorcery affected my shadows," Sunstorm eventually admitted. "I don't know how. Normal sorcery had no effect, but he blew away my shroud with a single spell and leveled half of the valley at the same time."
Seraph froze. A single spell? That sounded impossible to her.
"Did you see him cast it?" she asked.
"No. I was trying to get an angle on that stupid beastkin champion of his, and,"
Sunstorm tried to say,
"did he cast anything like it later? Did you see that? What sort of spells did he use?"
Seraph asked, rapid fire. Sunstorm blinked. She swirled her glass, the wine forming a pattern around the outside.
He only used third-rank spells. The earlier spell had to be fifth or sixth rank, though. How else could he have affected my shadows? Gem abilities are far above the natural elements.
Seraph sighed. So the girl hadn't paid attention to anything important in the battle. This new bastion was a sorcerer. She knew this, but not where his talents lay.
If he affected your shadows, most likely he used the binding stone to enhance his sorcery, Seraph explained.
She couldn't imagine anything else. How he had done it was beyond her, however. Seraph knew of two likely methods the Bastion used to overwhelm Sunstorm's shadows. One of them seemed improbable, given how magic-resistant the shadows were. Although binding stones had immense power behind them, they didn't turn their owners into gods. That meant he had likely used the other method, which she had been taught was impossible for humans to use. After all, human sorcerers were supposed to be restricted to the natural elements.
Does it matter? Sunstorm muttered. He wasn't that strong.
Like I said, he didn't have a gemmed champion. I'll track him down and claim his head.
Then why don't you have his head already? Seraph retorted.
Like I said, enough, Seraph said.
Sunstorm shut up. After returning to her seat, Seraph poured two more glasses of wine. The boy still hadn't returned with the dustpan and brush. She hoped that Sunstorm hadn't killed him.
You're being too defensive, Seraph said. There's no shame in losing to a superior opponent.
Sunstorm opened her mouth to protest, but Seraph cut her off with a glare.
And he is superior. You've killed bastions before. You have nothing to prove to me or Master Fias. If he was the weakling you claim he is, then you'd be requesting to meet with our master and show off your prizes, not complaining about your missed opportunities.
Sunstorm remained silent. Continuing, Seraph said,
we've lost the bandits, but we planned around that. Master Fias won't be concerned. You say that our contact is still working with us, which means our plans can proceed. At worst, this accelerates our timetable. At best, the Bastion blunders at his next test.
Test? Sunstorm asked.
Don't worry, Seraph said. All I need you to do is return to his keep and survey it for me.
Done, Sunstorm said.
She didn't move.
I investigated it on the return trip. It's not that big.
Seraph stared at her.
Not that big sounds bigger than I expected. Explain.
Minutes passed as the younger champion briefed Seraph on the exterior of the keep. Seraph kept her surprise in check.
And the interior?
No answer.
You did go inside, didn't you? You weren't so scared of him that you refused to infiltrate his keep.
When Sunstorm didn't rise to the taunt, Seraph knew something was wrong.
What aren't you telling me? Seraph pressed, her brow furrowing.
He sensed me, Sunstorm said, her eyes boring into the tiled floor. When I teleported, he knew where I'd appear. It's how I lost a sword. He even knew when I used a shadow double. How could he do that so easily?
Talented sorcerers can detect champions, Seraph said. If you're using your abilities, then it's even easier for him to find you without even trying.
But it takes time to scan for magic, Sunstorm protested.
Hence why I say talented, Seraph said. I did say he is a superior opponent. You've done well today, Sunstorm. Remember that you haven't done anything to upset me or Master Fias. Rest up, recharge your gem, and prepare for your next mission. I'll brief you in the morning.
Sunstorm left. The servant boy slipped through the door a minute later and swept up the remains of both empty wine bottles. When he brought another to the table, Seraph waved him off and retreated to her bedroom. What a mess she was in, she thought. She threw herself onto the pile of cushions on top of her bed. The mattress swallowed her groan. The Empire had stopped the ley line disruption far earlier than expected. The new bastion was orders of magnitude more capable than Fias had claimed. Seraph cursed Fias's arrogance. Years of experience had taught Seraph that taking a bastion lightly was the highway to the grave. For every incompetent bastion that Sunstorm could behead without even blinking, another could blow her away just as quickly. The raw power of a binding stone was not to be trifled with. But Fias didn't care. All he had told Seraph was that the new bastion was too weak to be of any concern, and that the Empire had sent him to Garrick Pass to get him out of the way. Seraph didn't understand why the Empire would ever promote somebody to Bastion, only to put them in a corner and forget about them. But Fias had dismissed her concerns, then pissed off up north with his other champions. They smirked and giggled behind her back, questioning why she worried about a Bastion that everybody knew was incompetent. And now that Bastion had built a fortress from nothing in 3 weeks, defeated Sunstorm and her pet Spellblade, and appeared capable of sorcery that Seraph had been told was fundamentally impossible for humans. She could salvage this. Fias was too arrogant to believe she knew how the ley lines worked, but she had been a champion longer than he had been sticking it in those giggling idiots that worshipped him. If the ley line stopped being disrupted, then all of that magical energy had to go somewhere. Bastion Nathan Straub would need to prove himself to be a capable commander, even swifter than he had built his fortress. In the meantime, Seraph had the time to prepare her next move. First, though, she needed to tell Fias. Beautiful, stupid Fias. She opened the connection over the wireless after she confirmed it was magically secured. Almost 5 minutes passed before he answered.
"Why are you wasting my time this late, Seraph?" Fias grumbled over the wireless, his voice crackling. "I need your authority to accelerate my plans down south," Seraph said, closing her eyes and imagining something less irritating than his voice. "The Empire is making its move."
Chapter 17. Nathan watched the carriages roll up along the road toward his fortress. There were three of them, all decorated in Von Clare regalia. A company of Anna's soldiers accompanied the convoy. This wasn't a social visit. Anna wouldn't have brought so many horseless carriages if she only wanted to see Nathan. In fact, she probably would have requested that he visit her. Several weeks had passed since they defeated the bandits and recruited Sen. Summer had arrived. Wildlife overran the nearby forests, and pollen filled the air. Nathan's nose was constantly irritated whenever he was outside. And the ley lines had stabilized. Nathan descended from the wall. It now extended farther than it had a few weeks ago, and separated the fortress into two halves. A massive wall protected the upper section of the fortress and ringed the keep. The soldiers and clerks stayed here and practiced in the main courtyard. An inner wall separated the upper section from the lower section, and it contained a single gatehouse for now. As Cuda had predicted, merchants and peasants flocked to Garrick Pass once news spread. A bastion was in the county, and his fortress promised protection. Caravans began to stop here, and that meant there was money to be made. Trade grew as people serviced the caravans. Then shops opened up for the people living in the fortress, and soon families moved in because other people were here. More people arrived each day. Nathan had constructed the lower section to protect them, given they had begun to build their own town outside the walls. How many years had it been since he had commanded a fortress that needed to worry about and protect the general populace? Too many. The far reaches were practically uninhabitable, even if it had been an important choke point. His last fortress had been an isolated one. Nathan sped up the arrival of people through his bandit purges. Sen's group had been the main one. She had told him as such, and the ley lines had begun to stabilize within days. But smaller groups continued to operate with much weaker magic users. Running around burning out bandit camps had spread the word of a new bastion faster than normal. Within a month, they'd be spilling outside of the walls again if he didn't do something.
"Do you ever stop worrying about things?"
Sen asked him, dragging him from his thoughts. He looked over and saw her hovering by his side. When had she gotten here? He waved for her to follow him, then headed to the main courtyard in front of the keep. "I'm a bastion. If I don't worry about what happens next, who will?" Nathan replied.
"Somehow that feels too natural coming from you," Sen said. "I'm still not used to this."
"Remembering one past, but feeling completely differently?"
"Yes, that,"
Sen nodded, her eyes distant.
"I get strange feelings of nostalgia sometimes, but I don't know what I'm nostalgic about. Other times I feel like there's a hole in my heart, as if I should remember or associate something with what I'm seeing or remembering, but that thing is missing."
Sen suddenly smiled.
"You're something of a constant, at least."
Good to know, he thought. Kadria had carried out her end of the deal once again. The carriages rolled through the gate. Anna's soldiers formed up in ranks along either side of the courtyard to greet her. The officers wore their dress uniforms, their breastplates gleaming for the first time since they had arrived at the fortress. The captain of the guard patrolled the line, chewing out some of his subordinates and reshuffling the formation. He wanted the best-dressed guards at the front for his countess to see first. Nathan meditated while he waited. He checked on the ley lines, did rhythmic exercises to focus his sorcery, and monitored every presence in the fortress. Beside him, Sen leaned on her sheathed greatsword and tried not to make eye contact with any of the guards. Her profuse apologies had mended things enough that the guards didn't glare at her when she passed. At the same time, the fact she had to apologize so much meant there were things that couldn't be so easily forgiven. She was under his protection now and supporting him. That kept the guards happy. Even if they weren't happy, they had to live with it. Nathan could run his fortress without them.
"Sorry I'm late,"
Faye gasped out, running up to his side. Her tail wagged behind her, batting against Nathan's legs once she took up her position to his right. Sen smirked.
"Are you ever not late?"
She paused.
"Huh, I get the feeling you're supposed to be punctual."
Faye gave Sen an odd look, but shrugged the statement off. Her eye scanned the courtyard. A sigh of relief escaped her lips when she saw the convoy only beginning to enter the inner section of the fortress.
"Where's Kuda?" Faye asked. "I saw him at breakfast, so I know he's around." "You have time to pay attention to other people while shoveling down all that food?"
Sen asked. Faye glared at Sen. "Be nice," Nathan murmured. The two women glared at him instead. With a sigh, Nathan said, "Kuda is preparing the meeting room."
"Eh? Is this important?" Faye asked. "It's only Anna's carriage."
Sen laughed, then tried to cover her mouth and pretend she was coughing. Faye still glared at her. Nathan pushed both their heads down, causing both to wince and stop playing around. "Anna wouldn't bring three carriages if this was a social visit," Nathan explained.
"I also doubt the soldiers would line up like this," Sen remarked.
"No, that's pretty normal," Nathan said. "How often do you think the officers get a chance to show off how well-trained their companies are? Even a minor visit by the ruling noble is a big deal. You weren't on the wall, so you likely missed the crowds in the streets in the lower section."
Sen grimaced. "No, I saw them. I thought there was a market on today."
"That's at midday." Sen and Faye continued to chatter while they waited for the carriages to pull up. The soldiers accompanying Anna pulled away from the convoy. They took up positions at the far end of the courtyard. With so many in one place, Nathan noticed that the guards in the fortress had adjusted their uniform slightly, while the guards that had arrived with Anna only wore her family symbol, as befitting a private army. Those in the fortress were different. They had added a small silver patch from the Imperial Army. Nathan's historical knowledge of the Empire wasn't complete enough to help him recognize what it was, but he at least knew that the guards in the fortress now identified themselves as soldiers of the Empire, rather than mere hired swords under a noble. For many of them, it was a large step up in status. The carriages came to a stop. Anna stepped out from the closest one, her dirty blonde hair almost brown in the summer sun. She wore an elegant ruffled black dress covered with silver ribbons and bore a red sash. Her heels were larger than her bust, and Nathan doubted she had any plans to run about much today. She was dressed to impress. Vera joined her a moment later in the same sorceress robes from the other day. Her white robe gleamed. Clearly, she had cleaned them after the storm. The lead carriage disgorged a handful of clerks, all dressed up in their puffery and carrying books and pens. They clustered a short distance away from Anna and Vera, talking furtively to one another. The officers called their soldiers to attention. A clatter of boots and armor resounded across the courtyard. Hundreds of mailed gloves slapped against breastplates. Faye clapped her hands over her ears. Gently, Nathan pulled them down, ignoring her watery eyes. A lean, muscled giant jumped down from the last carriage. His gray hair was neatly cropped, and his sideburns ran low on his jawline. He didn't wear any armor, favoring a simple officer's uniform that matched Nathan's. A golden badge gleamed from his collar, however. The badge of the royal family. Bastion Leopold Tyrim, the oldest bastion in the Anfeng Empire, surveyed the courtyard with a gentle smile. Slowly, he raised his hand to his chest in a salute. He lowered it, then gestured for the assembled soldiers to be at ease.
"Is that him?" Sen mumbled.
Faye shot Sen a look of disbelief. The beastkin's eyes were wide as dinner plates, her ears and tail standing on end.
"How can you not recognize Bastion Leopold?" Faye hissed.
Sen stared at Faye, then looked up at Nathan and shrugged.
"That's a yes, then."
Another person descended from the carriage behind Leopold. Nathan stared at her. He had expected to see her at some point, but not this soon. Kiana. She had served Leopold briefly before the fall of the Empire. Her opinions of him had colored Nathan's view of him, causing him to take many of the negative views of Leopold with a grain of salt. She looked so young. Her single horns stuck out from her forehead. Her platinum hair glowed in the sunlight. She had tied it back in a ponytail, pulling back her bangs that Nathan had always encouraged her to keep. Her horse's tail swayed behind her as she followed Leopold. Anna and her entourage approached Nathan. He greeted Leopold with a salute, and the other bastion returned it. Kiana stared up at Nathan with cautious eyes, then hid behind Leopold when Nathan looked back at her. "Forgive her," Leopold said with a chuckle. "Unicorn beastkin are naturally skittish around men, especially those who are more..." His eyes lingered on Faye and Sen, who hovered close to Nathan's side. "Active? Yes, let's leave it at that," Leopold laughed. "It's fine." Nathan shrugged, despite feeling the opposite. "But why bring a unicorn here, given they are rightfully wary of people?" Leopold raised an eyebrow. "She needs to learn how to handle others. Men, women, active men, enemies, and eventually demons." "You're training her to be a champion?" Nathan asked. "Blunt, aren't we?" Leopold chuckled. "Let's head inside and continue this." Anna coughed and gave Leopold a look. He sighed, scratched a hairy cheek, and decided to stay put. "Ah, yes, the formalities," he said. "Well met, Bastion Nathan. On behalf of His Majesty, I congratulate you on your early victories as Bastion, and for uncovering a plot against the Empire.
Suffice it to say that rewards are being prepared and will be doled out once the Federation is sufficiently cowed.
Leopold gave Anna a look.
Good enough?
You sound like I'm torturing you, Anna whined. It can't be that bad, can it? You live in the capital and deal with royal politics all day long.
And here I am on a delightful holiday, but you're making me carry out my duties as if I'm still in the stuffy halls of a laic.
Leopold winked at Nathan.
Now, shall we go inside?
Chapter 18. Once inside, Anna forced them to attend to the immediate issue first. Nathan allowed the Kiana conversation to drop for now. The meeting room was a recent addition to the keep. Nathan always preferred more casual or military-esque rooms when he was with others. Sitting rooms with a few sofas, or a war room where everybody could stand around a map or other point of interest. But Anna had visited 2 weeks ago and complained about the lack of a proper meeting room. Apparently, a large table and chairs are necessary. Nathan hated the trappings of nobility and the boring halls of power that he had dealt with in his homeland of Falmir, but he let Anna get her way this time. Everybody sat around a single long table. Nobody sat at either end, not even Leopold. Anna showed open annoyance at that fact, gesturing to Leopold with her eyes, but he ignored her. Kiana tried to remain standing. Leopold then forced her to sit next to him. Sitting opposite Leopold was Faye, whose tail moved at 1,000 miles per hour. It moved so fast that Nathan could hear it. Nathan finished summarizing the situation. The only person who appeared interested in what had happened was Kiana, whose concern visibly grew the longer that Nathan talked. He ignored her.
How come you never mentioned what the ley line disruption would cause? Anna asked, her face marred by a scowl.
If I say you never asked, will you be angry? Nathan tried.
Anna's glare answered his question.
You know now, don't you? Leopold suggested.
That explanation is somehow worse, Anna said, turning her ire on Leopold.
His smile didn't move an inch.
I didn't want to induce unnecessary panic, Nathan explained. While ley line disruption can cause a demonic invasion, it often doesn't. It wasn't until I had confirmed other matters, such as the involvement of the Federation with the bandits, that I suspected what was happening.
Quite a fast conclusion, I must admit, Leopold said.
His eyes bore into Nathan,
especially as Vera said something different, that you believed a demonic invasion would occur before you confirmed that a Federation champion was involved.
Had she? Nathan didn't look at Vera, but he imagined she might be avoiding his gaze right now. In truth, Nathan had been grasping at straws during his conversation with Vera. She had doubted his belief that the Federation would go to war with the Empire. He needed something that would prod her into action, and he had found it. But the idea that the Federation had genuinely been trying to disrupt the ley lines in an attempt to cause a demonic invasion? That thought had never seriously occurred to him before he saw Sunstorm meeting with Sen. He had thought the idea to be too heretical for any Bastion to attempt. The demonic portal here was too passive, Nathan explained, trying to talk his way out of any suspicion.
All the energy had to be going somewhere. The Federation were behaving suspiciously, but I'll admit I never seriously thought they were trying to cause a demonic invasion.
But you think they are now? Leopold pressed.
His smile remained firmly in place. Kiana looked between Leopold and Nathan, her eyes overflowing with panic. She rocked back and forth in her chair, but refused to say anything. Everybody else in the room stared at her, but Leopold and Nathan ignored her.
Sen has admitted that the Federation taught her how to disrupt the ley lines with the cairn, Nathan said, gesturing to the spellblade sitting next to him. We battled with a Federation champion by the name of Sunstorm in our territory. The ley line disruption has ceased now that I'm disabling the bandits.
Systematic leyline disruption over the course of several months would have resulted in a new demonic portal opening at the cairn if we hadn't stopped it.
Kiana froze. Her gaze slowly shifted from Nathan to Leopold.
The room remained silent, although Anna continued to look annoyed. Kuda took the opportunity to slip in and provide coffee and tea cakes for everybody.
"I took a risk when I allowed you into the academy," Leopold said abruptly, lowering his mug. "Your father spoke ill of you, and most suspected you of seeking vengeance, given you had just been disinherited. There were other rumors as well, but those who dealt with you, at least without knowing your background, spoke well of you."
Nathan remained silent. In his timeline, he had never found out why he was allowed to become a Bastion, or what made him better than his counterparts. He had outlived his entire class. His master had never thought much of him, at least publicly, but Nathan had been given dangerous postings. By proving himself, Nathan rose in status and power. He gained champions faster than others and eventually became a legend. A Bastion with a tri-gem champion, and later several tri-gem champions. So Leopold's words keenly interested Nathan, even if they applied to his false past.
"Your father has a reputation," Leopold said. "Your falling out with him piqued my interest. Surely a man who has lost everything will see the world differently." It seems I was right. "You're sharp. The Meisters noted that you devoured information in the academy, and now you're forging a reputation within mere weeks of arriving."
Nathan blinked. Somehow Leopold's opinion applied to both the false him and the real him. A man who had lost everything. As sure a description of Nathan as any, he felt.
"You agree with his assessment of the Federation?" Anna asked.
She bit her lip, her eyes moving nervously between the two bastions.
"What do you think of his assessment, Anna?" Leopold asked.
"Are you kidding me?" Anna shouted. "You already know this."
"And now I am asking you to repeat it in his presence."
Anna rolled her eyes and crossed her arms with a huff.
"He's right. I've been telling you ever since my father passed away that the Federation has been moving on Garrick County. This isn't about tolls anymore. The bandits attacked my town."
She glared at Sen, who grimaced and looked away.
"I see. And you, Vera?"
Leopold asked, turning his attention to the red-headed sorceress.
"I don't see any flaws in his theory. A monogem federation lurking near our borders is one thing, but actively helping to disrupt the ley lines? Even if they weren't trying to cause a demonic invasion, it's still an act of war," Vera said.
Leopold nodded. He stroked his bare chin.
"Leopold," Kiana cried. She stood up. "Why are you doing this? He's clearly right."
Finally, Leopold and Nathan looked at Kiana. Both of them hid their smiles, although Sen prodded Nathan in the side and glared at him. Clearly, Sen had noticed his odd behavior.
"It seems my ward believes in you, Nathan," Leopold said after a brief pause. "I appreciate your backing, Kiana," Nathan said.
Then he froze. She hadn't been introduced yet. Leopold had skipped introductions earlier, presumably because everybody recognized him. Kiana's face lit up as if it were on fire. She dropped into her chair and mumbled something inaudible. If anyone noticed Nathan's mistake, they didn't comment on it or raise an eyebrow. Leopold patted Kiana on the shoulder and winked at Nathan.
"Indeed, your assessment is correct," Leopold said. "Sorry for the runaround. I was curious to see if opinion may sour when confronted."
Despite his front as a genial old man, Leopold was a savvy political player. He couldn't be the Emperor's right-hand man if he weren't. Anna scowled at Leopold before straightening up in her chair.
"I believe you asked about Kiana earlier," Leopold continued. "Her path is not yet set. Unicorn Beastkin are exceedingly rare,
The Empire may not practice slavery, but the same cannot be said of other nations, and many nobles would stop at nothing to have her in their household.
Leopold's face darkened, and Nathan felt his pulse quicken.
Nathan made a mental note not to get on Leopold's bad side. The man genuinely terrified him in a primal way.
As such, I am training her as my ward. I don't know whether she's a better fit as a champion or a bastion yet, but I don't want to predispose her to either choice.
Leopold paused.
Nathan nodded. Becoming a champion is a one-way path. I thought that was only if she received a gem, Vera said.
Leopold glanced at Nathan, who shrugged. Vera was making an assumption there. Faye had told her about the one-way path bit, but many people already knew about it. If Vera believed that it was because of a gem, then that was her choice.
Champion gems are permanent, yes, Leopold said. But all champion and bastion enhancements are permanent. One can never stop being a champion or bastion.
The frown on Vera's face suggested she didn't understand. Neither Nathan nor Leopold helped her. They had an oath to uphold. Many secrets of bastions needed protecting. That the Federation had tried to cause a demonic invasion using the ley lines was proof of that. Not even other bastions could be completely trusted. Nathan felt like he suddenly understood why his old master never told him much. Had this sort of thing happened in the past? Had older bastions questioned each other and found that the only way to protect the world was to withhold knowledge? Nathan didn't know. He didn't even know if that was the right choice.
Leopold, Kiana spoke up.
In a minute, Kiana, Leopold said.
He patted her on the shoulder again.
Speaking of gems, I have a gift for you.
One of the functionaries from earlier brought in a small velvet bag. Within it was a small wooden box embossed with the golden emblem of the Emperor. Leopold held his hand over it for a second, and Nathan felt a pulse of power enter the box. Then Leopold slid it across the table. Three gems sat within the plush confines of the box: an amethyst, a diamond, and a sapphire. Nathan's fingers shot to the amethyst first. He lifted it out of the box, held it up, and silently probed it with magic.
I wasn't sure which would be most suitable for young Yphela, Leopold continued. Her Meisters spoke highly of her abilities, but none were entirely certain of what path to suggest. I heard about her speed and chose suitable gems to supplement such a champion, although the abilities from each gem are flexible.
Faye tried to say. Her ears flattened as Leopold turned his attention to her, and she quietened. Her tail stuck bolt upright. Nathan ruffled her hair, and she slowly calmed down.
I've changed my enhancement to both speed and strength, Faye said,
quiet enough that a pin drop would overpower her voice.
Will these gems suit me still?
Leopold smiled, and it was a genuine smile, unlike his poker face.
Of course, the amethyst is perhaps more single-minded as far as gems go, favoring strength and offensive abilities. But diamonds are easily the most flexible of physical enhancement gems, and the sapphire offers great variety if you wish to utilize gem abilities more.
They're fairly standard gems for physical fighters, Nathan added, and especially for a young champion. More daring gems can be dangerous to rely on.
Nathan returned the amethyst to the box, noting the way Faye's eyes followed his every move. The box remained on the table for the rest of the meeting, but he kept it firmly shut and within arm's reach.
Thank you, Bastion Leopold, Nathan said.
Leopold waved him off.
I can spare a few gems. The question is, can Yphela support one? The Academy trained you, so you should know how to gem champions. But given the coming storm, you will need a monogem champion now more than ever.
Even a dullard could read Leopold's hidden message. Nathan needed to handle this by himself, at least for now.
There was a war on, after all, or close enough. Leopold's champions were needed elsewhere within the Empire.
Leopold, Kiana mumbled, there's something else.
Is there something else, Nathan? Leopold asked him. Test after test with this old man. Nathan squared his gaze at Kiana, who blushed and looked at the table. He waited patiently for her to look back at him. Almost a minute passed. Eventually, she raised her head and looked him in the eyes. Her breathing quickened. I'm not going to bite, Nathan said gently. You've been nervous ever since I gave my original report.
I know, Kiana mumbled.
Leopold's hand rubbed her shoulder, and she took a deep breath, her fluffy ears twitching.
I assume you want to see the portal then, Nathan said. I can't imagine why else you've been so antsy since I mentioned the ley line disruption ceased.
Chapter 19. The gate leading to the portal was as nondescript as before. Nothing appeared to have changed on the outside, save for a pair of soldiers standing guard outside of it. They saluted as the party approached.
You're not patrolling the interior? Leopold asked.
He seemed surprised that the gate was closed.
That's my job, Faye chirped.
She froze when Leopold's gaze turned to her and hid behind Nathan.
I don't recall her Meister saying she's so shy, Leopold mused, his lips quirking upward.
She's a fan, Nathan said flatly. Leopold suppressed a grin and elbowed the air between them. For a geezer, he was a sharp one, and far more willing to play around than Nathan had expected. Stepping up to the gate, Nathan reached for power from the binding stone. Faye jumped in front of him before he could push the doors open.
I can open them, she chirped. I have my key.
Nathan smiled at her, then reached over top of her and gave the doors a shove. A tiny pulse of magical resistance pushed back at Nathan, but it melted when the binding stone's power struck it. The doors opened a crack.
How come you don't have to use a key? Faye pouted.
I imagine because he's the Bastion and he sealed the doors, Leopold said.
His smile had slipped, and his eyes focused on Nathan.
A curious method to keep the portal secure. I presume the keys are enchanted?
They are. It's the same method used for vaults and treasuries. A small set of keys with an enchantment that can unlock the door, except the seal is coded to a specific magical signature. Nathan shrugged. I read about the technique in the academy. It's used in Falmir.
Is it? Leopold's smile returned. Perhaps I'll see if it works for any of my portals when I return. My champions would appreciate being able to keep the demons on the other side without needing to watch the gate all day long. Although I imagine that some may use the closed doors as an excuse to ignore the portal longer than they should.
Nathan winced. More than one fortress had fallen because of champions who didn't investigate the portal regularly, and bastions who weren't paying attention. Out of sight, out of mind was a dangerous mindset, but a popular one.
Can we go in? Anna asked. You've had me on edge since Nathan refused to properly answer Kiana.
Kiana ducked her head at the sound of her name. Hiding a smile at Kiana's shyness, Nathan opened the gate all the way. Gasps rung out. Faye shot through the open doors, her scimitar out, and gave the all-clear signal. Sen drew her greatsword and took up a watch position beside Faye. The rest of them trooped inside afterward. Kiana looked around with a mix of apprehension and triumph, as if she wasn't sure if she should be happy or terrified that she was right.
I thought you said the portal was passive, Anna said.
She pointed at the bottom of the valley they stood in.
I'm no expert, but that looks pretty ominous. And there are demons here.
She was right. The tiny valley from earlier was no more. Worryingly, the portal now met expectations for what a demonic portal should look like, at least to a casual observer. The valley leading down to the clearing had broadened. An army could comfortably march toward the keep without breaking formation. Further below, the clearing had expanded as well. The central mound had transformed into a massive set of craggy rocks reaching for the sky. Dozens of campfires had been built in the clearing, although only a few were lit.
"Care to take care of the demons, Fay?"
Nathan suggested. She was the reason so few campfires were being used. The demons barely had time to react before she careened into them.
"Putting that speed enhancement to good work, I see," Leopold said.
Then he winced as Fay bisected a demon.
"Or something else. A bespoke enhancement?"
"She found the speed enhancement too restrictive," Nathan said. "So I've combined the strength and speed enhancements to her liking. I've tweaked it a few times over the last few weeks, although at this point I think she just likes the process."
"Yes, young champions get like that," Leopold said dryly.
"This may be wrong of me to say, but I wonder what the goddess was thinking to make the process generate such emotions."
The nearby women stared at Leopold and Nathan in confusion. Sen hadn't gone through the champion enhancement process. Although Nathan had thought Vera had picked up on the gist of it, perhaps she didn't realize it happened to every champion.
"Why aren't you surprised by this?" Anna asked, gesturing to their surroundings. "Or worried. Or something."
"Because he's been trained for situations exactly like this. Isn't that right, Nathan?"
Leopold turned to face Nathan, his poker face firmly in place and eyes twinkling. Behind him, Kiana nodded enthusiastically. She had understood what was happening the moment she found out what happened to the ley lines, after all.
"But this was a trick question."
Nathan didn't understand why, but Leopold was testing him. Again. The trick was that Nathan could never have learned what was happening right now, at least not the normal way. No book had ever been published or would ever be published describing this. Most bastions never encountered this set of circumstances either, because it required somebody to commit heresy in the first place. The portal had been passive when Nathan had arrived. He had known that the energy must be going somewhere else, and any bastion could determine that fact. The ley lines were being disrupted and causing the demonic energy from the portal to flow out into the world. Eventually, that would create a new portal and a new demonic invasion. The natural reaction was to stop the disruption. Everything should go back to normal. But it wasn't, and it was for the same reason that the ley line disruption had weakened the portal to begin with. "It's similar, but different," Nathan answered, trying to hedge around his actual knowledge. "This looks and feels like a cascade, but it's not."
"A cascade?" Vera probed.
Leopold gave her a considering look, then shrugged and gestured for Nathan to continue. "All binding stones and demonic portals are linked through the ley lines. When excess energy pours out of one portal, it must go somewhere. Normally this isn't an issue, but when too much energy pours out at once, we call it a cascade," Nathan explained.
"This is how demonic invasions can occur at multiple portals at once or in close sequence. Not all of the energy from the first invasion was let out, so it spills over to nearby portals."
"But that's not what's happening here?" Vera asked.
"It is, but it can't be," Nathan said. "There are no demonic invasions nearby. The Binding Stone at Forzel Valley hasn't reported any. Neither have any other fortresses deeper within the Empire. And the Binding Stone on the other side of the mountains, within the Federation's Fort Tobrum, is still inactive."
Leopold nodded, his smile broadening.
"So?"
"Like I said, it's a cascade, but it isn't. The effects are the same. Rapid expansion of the portal, constant arrival of demons, an accelerating rise in demonic energy. Every time I take out a bandit group, the situation worsens, so I've slowed down."
That was a lie.
Nathan had been taking it slow since dealing with Sen because he had expected this.
"In other words, you think this cascade is related to the ley lines?" Leopold asked.
Kiana was practically jumping up and down.
"I believe your ward agrees," Nathan said, inclining his head toward the unicorn beastkin.
She blushed, but stood her ground this time.
He's right, Leopold, Kiana said, and you know he is. You taught me about ley line cascades.
That I did, Leopold said. He patted Kiana on the shoulder again. Yes, this is a cascade. It is, in fact, the primary reason I came out here. I wanted to confirm that Garrick Pass still existed, and that I wouldn't need to hold this fortress myself. What a vote of confidence, Nathan drawled.
Anna's jaw dropped. After several seconds, she picked it back up and gathered her wits. You thought my county was in danger but did nothing? She hissed. What kind of protection is this?
The sort that is focused on the future of the Empire, Leopold said. His smile dropped. A bastion who can't deal with a demonic invasion isn't useful to His Majesty. That is the cold, hard truth. The fact you appear to be managing the situation is a testament to your ability, Nathan. Most would have suppressed all the bandits within a few days, then been overwhelmed by the ensuing demonic horde immediately. A valiant end, but a pointless one.
Nathan shrugged. Somehow this colder side of Leopold felt easier to deal with, perhaps because he felt similar to many other senior bastions from Nathan's timeline.
I estimate I have another week or two, he said. My real worry is the Federation. I can deal with demons, but both at once? Fortunately, you will now have a monogem champion of your own, Leopold said. Although I recommend that you make some more preparations.
His gaze fell on Sen. Did he realize that she wasn't a champion yet? Probably. Nathan hadn't requested permission to grant her the status. Sen lacked the training to accept an enhancement, and there was something else she was much more suited for.
I have a few more tricks up my sleeve, Nathan admitted. If we're done here, why don't we have some lunch? The cooks have prepared something special.
The rest of Leopold's visit went smoothly. Seeing Kiana during her cuter phase was heartwarming for Nathan, as his memories of Kiana so young were very distant. But when Leopold left with Anna and Vera, Nathan found his thoughts drifting to the coming war. War. The very thing that Nathan had come back in time to avoid. He knew what he needed to do to stop his timeline from happening and the demons from destroying everything. But was that enough to stop the messengers in this timeline? He needed to make more preparations.
Chapter 20.
Are you sure about this? Nathan asked Sen.
I may not remember him, but every bone in my body calls out for him, Sen answered. I feel like I'm missing a limb.
Nathan finished pouring salt for the summoning circle. Standing up, he sighed. Sen copied him, then shot him a grin when he glared at her. You remember the price you'll pay, don't you? Nathan reminded her.
I won't age. He'll take up a seat in my mind. I'll lose access to all sorcery that isn't fire element or closely related, but lose my weakness to water.
Sen began ticking off fingers.
My hair will slowly lose its color. My eyes will turn red. I'll grow horns.
You won't, Nathan corrected. Grow horns, that is.
You make it sound like I will.
The pair of them stood in an underground chamber within the keep. Fay knew they were down here, but nobody else did. The door was locked and sealed with magic from the binding stone. The floor of the room was covered with symbols, two summoning circles, to be precise. The inner circle was drawn in chalk, was very simple, and 9 candles burned around the circumference. The outer circle was drawn with salt and was far more complicated. Spaces had been left for runes to be drawn with magic, and a larger one for Sen to stand connected the two circles. Allowing a spirit to possess you is a life-altering decision, Nathan explained, for what he felt was the 100th time. And an Ifrit is easily one of the most powerful spirits you can summon. If I hadn't already seen you spend a lifetime supporting him in your mind, I would never let you do this.
But somebody already did in your timeline,
Sen said. She smiled.
And I'm choosing to be possessed this time.
Nathan looked away. He hated this.
I want to help you, Nathan, but I haven't trained in the academy. I haven't acclimated to champion enhancement. You even admitted you don't know how many gems I might be able to support, even if I become a champion. But you know my potential with Ifrit.
Sen took his hands.
Rather than spend years waiting to become a champion and fight by your side, I'm making the choice to fight with you now.
I still disagree with your choice, Nathan said, but it's your choice. He didn't know how to handle this Sen. One look into her eyes and his doubts vanished. She was his Sen. He knew that, but she didn't act like her. The Sen he knew was timid. She was terrified of her own power and sought his comfort because she needed it, not because she wanted to cuddle. The root cause of the change was the very ritual she was about to undergo. Although Nathan knew very little about Sen's past, he knew that the Federation had forced her to be possessed by an Ifrit. Her affinity with fire and natural talent with sorcery made her an immensely dangerous weapon, and he eventually got her away from the Federation. But the damage had been done. Was he about to put her through the same trauma?
You're looking at me like that again, Sen said, her voice low. You need to think less, Nathan.
Thinking is a large part of my job, Nathan said.
Think about the right things, then, Sen huffed. Look, we spoke about this. I'm fine the way I am.
Nathan was torn. Kadria had held up her end of the bargain. Sen trusted him, loved him, and talked about feelings and emotions that reminded Nathan of his old Sen. But she didn't have the memories of his old Sen. What she had were emotions about events and people she didn't remember. Phantom limb syndrome was a problem that caused people who had lost an arm or a leg to still feel sensations from it. Sen suffered from phantom memory syndrome, where she trusted Nathan because of memories she no longer had. For all of Nathan's worries about overwriting the Sen from this timeline, he wondered if it would have been a better choice.
Nathan, Sen warned.
You say that you're happy, but you don't know what you're missing, Nathan said.
Maybe, but I can feel the emotion.